Good morning and welcome to the Floortime Foundation's May 2nd, 2007 web radio program, Infants, Children, and Families, featuring Dr. Stanley Greenspan.
Good morning and welcome to our web-based radio show. Thank you for joining us today. Today we have an important topic because it's one that I get many questions about, but also that I observe is both easy and hard for both colleagues, professional colleagues, and caregivers, including parents and others, grandparents and volunteers and friends. It's the simplest and the hardest part of our approach to children with special needs. So the theme and the topic for today's show is, and the headline is, how to really follow the child's lead and yet at the same time challenge the child to move up the developmental ladder to higher and higher levels of emotional, social, and intellectual development. So what do we mean by really following the child's lead? Well, perhaps I can put as the subtitle or the second headline for this is that when we're truly following the child's lead, we shouldn't be able to predict or expect what the child is going to do next. In other words, if we are working with a verbal child and we are pulling for a particular response, like what is this, showing him an apple, or what is this, showing him a car, and expecting a reality-based answer, car, apple, then we're leading the child. We're not following the child's lead. We're looking for creativity and spontaneity. It doesn't have to be imaginative play right off the bat, but we're looking for the child's response. So if we say, show the child an apple and a pear, and we say, what do you want? And he has to make a choice. And he reaches for the apple. And then we say, which one? And he says, apple. Okay, then he surprised us because he's reached and said, because we didn't know whether he would reach for the apple or the pear. I mean, we may know the child well, know he likes apples better, and have a strong hunch that he's going to reach for the apple, but that's fine. We don't know for sure. We're not pulling for a response. We're just as happy if he goes for the pear or the banana or the tangerine and says something else. And we're just as happy if he names it with a made-up name, a pretend name, and says for the tangerine, this is the goopy fruit. And we would think that's even more original and more creative, even though it's inaccurate. We want to correct them. So the key is, if you can predict or expect what the response is going to be, you're leading the child, you're structuring it. You're working on more memory-based learning than truly learning that comes from the child. Now, why do we emphasize this part of following the child's lead so much in Floortime? Well, as you recall from prior discussions, the major challenge for children with special needs and especially autistic spectrum disorders is connecting their intentionality or their affect or their desire or their wishes to their emerging motor skills for planning actions like reaching, taking, showing, and also when they begin using words, connecting that intention, desire, that affect, that emotion to the emerging word. So when they say love you, they know what it means because they're feeling love and they use the word love. They're not just scripting it or memorizing it and saying it because they heard it on a TV show or you told them to say it. They know what the apple really is. They're not just saying apple and then don't know what to ask for when they really want an apple. A lot of kids can identify apples in a picture or cars in a picture, but don't really know what a car is. So if you say, what's a car? They can't pick it out among the toys or show you how to play with it, although they can identify it in a picture. So we want to really know. To really know means investing that word with emotional meaning. You've played with a car. You've eaten the apple. You know what an apple is because you've tasted it. You've smelled it. You've touched it. You've been joyed when mommy gives it to you, or you're disgusted by it, you don't like it, you've tossed it away and gone, ick. But whatever it is, you've had multiple emotional experiences with it that gives you a meaning for apple, just like the word mother, or the word love, or the word share is connected with multiple experiences that all have complex social and emotional meanings to you that are associated with that word. These build up over time. The more experience we have in the world, the more advanced the meaning is for the word. So a word like mother changes over time. Initially it's hugs and kisses, then it's limit setting also, then it's fun play and pretend play, then it's a combination of satisfaction and frustration, etc., etc. It comes to, then it's consistent intimacy, then it's protection. So it's many meanings all together based on all your experiences. And that's why each child has a different picture of mother. It means different things depending on your personal history and experience. But that will only come about when the word is used in a truly original way, i.e. where we're not scripting it for the child. So the key is do not pull for particular responses. Do not be testing the child or judging the child or teaching the child in that way. What you are teaching the child is a much more important lesson. You're teaching the child to connect, in this example I just gave, his ideas to his emotions so they have meaning. So you're teaching a much broader lesson. You're not teaching about an apple or a pear, per se. You're teaching them a much broader lesson about how words and concepts have meanings. It's a little bit like teaching someone to fish. Then they can fish for themselves and take care of themselves. And you teach the broader lesson that words have meanings. Then you're teaching the child to acquire new information and learn from the world on their own. You're not just teaching a specific tree. Again, to repeat the message, you should always be a little bit surprised. You should not pull for particular responses or words. Now, this plays out not just with words, but with gestures, too. You're holding up two objects. Which one will the child reach for? You shouldn't know in advance. Again, you may have a hunch, but you shouldn't know for sure in advance. You're giving the child a choice whether to tickle his feet or tickle his tummy in sensory raised play. You don't know where he's going to point or take your hand and put it. Rather than just knowing that he likes his tummy tickled and saying, tummy tickle, and the child nods yes. That's not bad. You're still getting engagement and interaction, but you know what the response is going to be in advance. You're pulling for it. You're working on a memory pattern rather than the child thinking for themselves and making decisions. So even if it's just gesturing or looking left or right, always have choices. Never be sure. Again, something as simple as looking to the left or the right, if you know the child is going to look to the right because there's something you're putting there that the child 100% of the time is going to do it, there's no choice involved. You're getting into a rote pattern. You're getting into a routine. Routines are good for going to sleep and maybe for eating and maybe for bathroom habits, but they're not good for learning the fundamentals of emotional, social, and intellectual development or language development, which is an important part of emotional, social, and intellectual development. So it's critical to not know in advance what the child is going to do, other than in the sense that you're pulling for the child to either gesture or use an idea in a meaningful way. Now, we use our six stages, attending, engaging, gesturing meaningfully and purposefully in a back and forth way, getting in a continuous flow of shared problem solving, using ideas meaningfully and creatively in pretend play, for example, and then using ideas logically, connecting ideas together, answering the why question, you know, connecting your idea to mother's question, why do you want to go outside? No, because I want to play. So those processes, those six I just outlined, from attention always up to connecting ideas together, yes, those are what we're challenging the child. That's what we're pulling for, those broad processes. So in that sense, there we're exercising some control, in a sense, that we're hoping the child will move up the ladder. But so for the forest issues, yes, we're leading the child. But on the trees, the child is the leader. And another way to remember this is that as a caregiver or as a therapist, you're the boss of safety. You're the boss of perhaps eating and going to sleep and hygiene issues. You're the boss of the important decisions. But in terms of the content, the specific trees of the interaction and the play, the child should always be the boss. You should be the boss, however, of trying to get these processes moving up the ladder. So while you're following the child's lead, let's say helping the child look to the left or the right, or engage with you by putting the red ball he likes on your head to see if he'll look to your face and reach for it, but not knowing for sure if he's going to do it, or if he'll take the go for the blue ball in your hand. As you're doing that and enticing the child, you're looking for the child moving up the ladder. You're trying to get more circles of communication, more complex shared social problem solving. You're trying to engage in pretend play. Now, also, it should be emphasized that one of the best ways with a child who's got a continuous flow of back and forth interaction, or almost, and is beginning to use ideas to some degree, of following the child's lead and getting things cooking without leading the child, is imaginative play. And I see that underemphasized with many professional colleagues and also with many caregivers. There's such joy once a child starts speaking and telling you that they want the juice, you know, not the broccoli, that we lose sight of the fact that pretend play with a child is the lion and you're the lioness, or you're the scared bunny rabbit running away, and having a dialogue and creating a drama out of that. That is the vehicle by which the child expands their use of ideas, expands their language through this child-initiated, i.e. meaningful, emotionally vibrant set of interactions. The pretend play is not easy to do, but the way to do it is obviously that you become a character in the child's drama and you're trying to constantly expand that drama. Whenever a caregiver or a therapist tells me, well, he isn't getting more complex and is pretending, the answer to that is observe where the natural interests are. Observe what the child is trying to do. Observe and challenge, make your character more interesting. Have your character not do the same thing over and over. The child is the teacher and you're the student, and the child is repetitively saying, sit down and take your pencil out, because that's what a teacher said at school. The child is repeating that. So you've got to challenge the child to go further. So you may get impish and say, lost pencil. Oh, I don't have a pencil. Help. You know, now the teacher has to say, there's your pencil, here it is, now be quiet. Oh, lost it again. Or, oh, one crayon, not pencil, no pencil, crayon. You must use a pencil, the child might say. Anyhow, you get into a dialogue, because you're being silly, you're mixing it up, getting a more complex dialogue. Or you can say, what should I draw with my pencil? What should I do with it? I have pencil, what should I do? What's next? Whether you challenge the child by throwing in a conflict, whether you extend it by what should I draw, you'll have to challenge the child to extend the drama. So challenging the child doesn't mean you're not following the child's lead. Some people take following the child's lead just to do whatever the child wants, but not that much input yourself. But this should be considered the play dramas, particularly imaginative play, but even gestural interactions. This is a twosome. So you follow the child's lead. You take your cue from the child's interest, what they're looking at, what they're playing with, what actions they're taking, even aimlessly wandering around the room. You take your clue from the child, but then you try to amplify. You try to build it up one step further. That's the key. You have to challenge a child to go further. So you're always in there mixing it up, throwing in curveballs, helping the child amplify, helping the child develop. So you never let the child just be repetitive, not because you say stop being repetitive, but your character challenges the child, or your gesture challenges the child. Child is pulling you to go do the same routine again, reach up on the shelf for the same ball that he's just put there, and it's now the fourth time. Well, your foot gets stuck on the way. Oh, I can't move. My foot is stuck. I want to help you get the ball. My foot is stuck. Foot stuck. And the child has to go unstuck your feet, you know, pull your foot out. Okay, then you trip and fall down. Oh, I fell. The child has to now pull you up to get you up. And eventually you get there where you help the child take the ball off the shelf. But now you've inserted five additional steps. Well, the child wants to go out the door, but the door is stuck. You have to get mommy to help, and then you have to get grandma to help, or the doggy, or say the magic words, you know, open door, etc. So you keep inserting more and more steps, so there's more circles of communication off the child's lead. So you're always challenging the child. Sometimes you'll get playfully obstructive. A child is aimlessly wandering. You may play our moving fence game where you put your arms around the child without touching the child. The child has to move your arms up or down. Or go into a tent where the child has to come into the tent and take you, or up on a platform. You may create an obstacle course where, to get to what the child does, you've got to jump in foam pits and go on a swing and do things that you know the child is going to enjoy, that creates a lot of sensory pleasure but also involves a lot of steps. And again, you don't know which one he's going to do first or second. You want to always create novelty, always create choice. So the child is always creating, so you're not leading. If you're too satisfied that you've gotten the response you've wanted, you should wipe the smile off your face, because you've led the child and you get a no-no for that, not a yes-yes. The child who frustrates you a little bit, that's good, because then the child is taking a stand. They're being an individual. Now, also key to following the child's lead is being a very good observer and not discounting what the child is doing. The child is repeating the same phrase over and over again. For example, there was a child who wanted to make sure that his grandmother would attend a particular event the family was going to have on that weekend, and kept saying, "Grandma, come, Grandma, come, Grandma, come." And mommy was getting impatient with that repetitive verbalization, but wasn't dealing with it. And she was unsure if Grandma was going to come, but because Grandma lived far away, she thought not, and wasn't addressing it because she thought her child would be frustrated and thought she could just ignore it and he would forget about it, because he didn't have much language. But he kept perseveratively saying, "Grandma, come, Grandma, come, Grandma, come." And she tried to distract him and then just said, "Stop saying that," and got frustrated. It's very important to get the message. And with a child who's a little bit verbal, help him know you understand him. That's a good way to go from repetition to a more creative dialogue. "Grandma, come? Want Grandma to come? Or want Grandma to stay home? Want Grandma to come? Want Grandma to come? And do what?" Now, you're afraid to go there because then the child will be even, you figure, more disappointed. But that's not the case. Let the child fantasize. "And do what when Grandma comes?" Child doesn't know. "Grandma, come give you a hug and kiss, or Grandma, come and go sleep." "Hug and kiss." Well, then you go to the dolly if the child can do pretend. Okay, which doll should we make Grandma? Who's going to be Sally or Johnny? You know, who can be Mommy? Okay, and you make doll and you play out. See if the child can play out the drama they want with Grandma. And then if the child comes back to "Grandma, come," you could say, "Should we call Grandma, or should we on the telephone and ask, or should we go sleep?" "Call Grandma, call Grandma." Okay. You get Grandma on the phone. Little Johnny can talk to Grandma. Say, "Grandma, come, come." And if Grandma says no, Okay, then you deal with the reality. You might have a child who weeps and cries a little bit. But meanwhile, you've dealt with it. You're no longer getting perseveration. You may get disappointment, a healthy human emotion. You may even get a tantrum at that point. But that's 15 minutes or a half hour or a day later after. And you're going to have to deal with it sooner or later anyhow. But you've acknowledged the child's meaning. And that often is the best solution to a perseverative use of words, where they read the intention behind it. What is the child trying to tell you? They're not elegant about it, and all they can do is repeat because they can't explain yet. They don't have the language what they really want. It's just what you would do. It's just what we see in elderly individuals do who've lost some of their language or who are worried about their memory or that they're going to forget. The same thing with repetitive gestures. What is the child trying to tell me? Also, the general principle here is try to give meaning. Try to find the purpose behind what seems to be aimless. If it's wandering, maybe the child enjoys the movement. If it's jumping and flapping, maybe the child is enjoying the flapping. Maybe the child is experiencing other sensations in their body when they're doing it. They're flapping their hands and they're hearing music. So join the child in the activity. And then try to say, fun or no fun. Fun, and you're jumping together. Once you enter the activity, you're jumping together, flapping together, being orchestra leaders together, put on music so it's rhythmical. Once you're doing it together and seeing if the child can be creative, and you may get playfully obstructive, you may make a game out of it, where you get your hand caught between his two hands as he's clapping them together, or put your hands near his where he's flapping so he's touching your hands. Mommy's hands here or away? Here or away? As you're doing this, you're finding out more about what the child is enjoying, finding out the nature of the child's experience. Always assume it's bringing the child something the child feels that they need, but that there's a better way to bring the child to that goal through interaction. Now, some children need a lot of sensory-based fun, so you want to have swings and foam pits and slides and other things where you can, little things you can jump on. Other things that you can have that vestibular satisfaction from, and then do those things together. So rhythmic activity, music, fun, get it cooking. So in summary, what we're talking about today is following the child's lead. It means observing carefully, seeing or even imputing intention where you may feel there is none, but trust me, often there will be, not always. Create interaction. And in those interactions, do not fall into the trap of pulling for a particular response, but always create choices, always try to be surprised, or at least not know in advance. And if you find yourself knowing in advance the word you want or the gesture you want, you're leading and scripting and controlling your child. If you don't know in advance what you're going to get, then you're a real floor timer. And then you're really following the child's lead. And you're always challenging the child to new levels, to move up that developmental ladder. More engagement, more circles of communication, more shared social problem solving, more focus on imaginative play. And finally, spontaneous conversations with why levels, and ideas connected together. So you'll also, the crowning, or icing on the cake, also, you'll have much more fun playing this way. Much more fun. It's more enjoyable, less anxiety provoking. So, yes, you are teaching. You're always teaching, but you're teaching the forest, not the trees. Thank you very much. Okay. We want this sentence.